Well, Trump is trumpeting plans to impose sanctions on Turkey and demand an immediate ceasefire as the situation in northern Syria spirals further and further out of control. Turkey's military offence on the region, of course, follows Trump's widely criticised decision to withdraw American troops. And he said he's handing over leadership of the fight against IS to Ankara. Now, he's been accused of abandoning the Syrian Democratic Forces, the mainly Kurdish militia that control this part of Syria, and acted as America's main ally in the fight. Joost Hilterman is the program director, Middle East and North Africa, for that splendid outfit, the International Crisis Group, and he was last on the program in 2016. Joost, welcome back. Why did the US decide to hand over leadership of the fight against IS?
So first of all, thank you for having me on your program. In answer to your question, you know, it's a mystery to me. If you were to look at it from an American point of view, it's unclear what the interest of the United States would be to do so. You would want to continue to control the situation in the Northeast in order to ensure that the Islamic State does not come back and that the IS detainees and their families are under in custody of your ally, local ally, which is the SDF. Now everything is up in the air, and it is unclear whether Turkey can fulfill this role, especially now that Syrian forces are moving northward toward the border.
Joost, since then, Trump's been muddled and contradictory as ever, and quite clearly there's no agreement within the administration.
No, there are deep divisions within it. And each time President Trump makes a declaration of this sort, and of course he's done it several times in the past 18 months, his advisors try to paddle him back, and with varying degrees of success. And right now it seems like that it is with very little success. So I think we're entering a new reality in northern Syria, one where the United States will not have forces on the ground. It would still have air power and therefore a certain leverage. But I think the situation is tilting toward Russia and Iran, which are, of course, the main backers of the Syrian government in Damascus.
Joost, what's been the reaction outside the US? What's NATO saying? What's the EU saying?
Well, they're all condemning the Turkish offensive. There's pretty much a unanimity about that. And that, of course, is putting a tremendous strain on the relationship between Turkey and NATO, which was already under stress for some time. Now, the question is, will Europe, for example, impose sanctions on its NATO partner, Turkey? If that were to happen, that might push Turkey further into the Russian camp.
Now, Joost, Turkey says that its main aim is to create a, quote, safe zone free of Kurdish militias. Tell us about that.
Well, Turkey has two primary objectives in northeastern Syria. One is to fight and defeat the Syrian affiliate of the PKK, which is the YPG, which is the main, component of the SDF that you refer to. That is a longstanding struggle. It started in the 1980s when the PKK first emerged in Turkey. And after 2012, after the uprising in Syria, the Syrian government basically handed over control over the northeast to this affiliate of the PKK, the YPG, because it feared that particular group less than it feared Syrian rebels that are to take control of Damascus. The Kurds have no such ambition. The second objective is to relocate Syrian refugees currently in Turkey to this area and to effect a demographic change that would keep the Kurds away from the Turkish border. But these are in majority Kurdish lands in most cases. And so this is a red line for the Kurdish side and for the YPG.
Tell me, is Turkey justified in calling the YPG terrorists?
You know, I don't even use the term terrorists. It's highly politicized. It's become meaningless.
Everybody who has a scintilla of justification?
No, I don't. This is a Turkish view. It's a political view. It's a serious view, but it's a label. But what is the important point here is that there is an actual conflict between Turkey and the PKK that needs to be resolved. It can be resolved militarily, maybe, but I don't think so. Or it could be solved diplomatically. Turkey, which calls the PKK terrorist, and by the way, so do the European Union and the United States, that same Turkey negotiated with the PKK in 2013 to 2015. Those negotiations broke down, but it also shows that in the end, this is a conflict between a government and a non-state actor, whatever you label them.
Now, this so-called safe zone, it's intended it would run for almost 500 kilometers along the Syrian side of the border.
That's correct. So Turkey feels threatened by the PKK, not only in Iraq, where the PKK has its headquarters in the mountains, but since 2012, also in Syria. And especially after the United States started providing military support to the YPG / SDF as part of the fight against the Islamic State, which picked up in 2015. And so it wants to push back against this and to reduce the power of the PKK so that eventually, if it comes to negotiations again, it can have more leverage than it currently has. As long as the YPG is in control of northeastern Syria, it could threaten with the PKK in Iraq, it could threaten Turkey from two sides along very long borders.
Joost Hilterman has come back to the program to be our tour guide in Turkey's offensive in North Syria. Joost is program director, Middle East and North Africa, for the International Crisis Group. Now, the Syrian Kurdish leaders have formed some sort of Russian brokered Iran-backed alliance with Bashar al-Assad. What does that mean, do you think?
Well, this notion of the YPG returning to the fold of the Syrian regime has been mooted for quite some time. And in fact, a year ago, the YPG, Kurdish commanders of the YPG, engaged in talks with Damascus about a possible return of the Syrian government forces, especially the military, to the north to guard the borders against Turkey. But what the Kurdish leaders insisted upon was that there be no return of the Syrian security apparatus to police the urban areas in the north, the Kurdish population, because the Kurds had a very bad experience with Syrian regime control until 2012. So quite understandably, they didn't want that to recur. Now what we see is that because those talks broke down over essentially neither side wanting to make basic concessions, that the Kurds have lost their leverage because the United States is withdrawing from the area. And suddenly the Syrian military forces are advancing to the border. The Kurds have agreed to that, but they're still insisting that the Syrian regime not return with its interior security forces into the urban areas. And it remains to be seen what kind of leverage they have left to prevent that, because clearly the Syrian regime wants to go back.
Joost, one of the Kurd spokespeople made the compelling statement that they had to choose between compromise and genocide.
Yes, Commander Mazlun Abdi said this, and I've spoken with him in the past. I was in northern Syria in March when I met with him. He clearly is facing a very difficult situation. He has to protect his people, and the Kurdish population is familiar with the notions of genocide and mass displacement. Has happened in northern Iraq, of course, in the past, and in Turkey. So, to some extent, in Turkey. And so for him to say so is clearly indicating that he doesn't have real choices in front of him. They're unpalatable choices. Clearly, he doesn't want his population to be murdered, if that's were to happen, or certainly displaced, which is happening. And so he must make a compromise, which is undesired, but that's what the reality they face because of the U.S. with troop withdrawal from northern Syria.
Yes, the SDF hold thousands of IS prisoners and have said if the offensive continues, this will no longer be a priority. And according to Kurdish officials, 800 foreigners affiliated with IS have now escaped.
Yeah, I don't know about the exact numbers, but and clearly the Kurdish commandos have an interest in playing up this particular aspect because they hope that they can convince the United States to not withdraw precipitously, if at all, and to basically to exploit internal divisions within the White House to and the Trump administration to convince the president to reverse his decision. And there's some sign today maybe that it's going in that direction because Vice President Pence gave a speech yesterday about the need to mediate and to get the Turks to halt their offensive. But it's clear that if the YPG is putting all its fighters into countering the Turkish offensive, then it doesn't leave much opportunity to protect these detention camps where thousands rather of ISIS fighters and their families are being held.
Yes, there are concerns about you use the term altering the demography. Let's be simpler than that. There are concerns that ethnic cleansing will take place if Erdogan succeeds in settling as many as 2 million Syrian refugees in his safe zone.
Yes, I mean, if clearly Turkey has borne an astonishing burden over the past few years, housing more than 3.5 million, I'm not sure the exact number, of Syrian refugees at a tremendous stress on its economy and society. So it is quite eager to see some of these, maybe a good portion of these refugees return to Syria. Now, the assumption seems to be in Ankara that these people cannot return to their original homes. And so it is convenient that if you create a buffer zone or safe zone in northern Syria to push these people into this area, but they would then have to take the homes of the local population, the indigenous population, which is a mixed population of Arabs and Turkmens and Christians, but also a majority Kurds. And so if you force the Kurds out, you could house these people there. But then the same thing will happen that happened a year and a half ago in Afrin, which was a Kurdish district further to the west, where Turkish forces invaded and did exactly the same thing. And clearly, this is going to be a major source of conflict for a long time to come.
Just off air, I was talking to you about the interesting fact that there's quite a large pile of U.S. nuclear weapons currently on Turkish soil. So when Trump talks about destroying Turkey, he's being, as usual, wildly intemperate. What would the sanctions he's proposing amount to? And would they have any effect?
I don't think at this stage that Turkey is going to be swayed by sanctions. I could be wrong, and I'm not an expert on Turkey, to be completely honest with you. But we have not seen anything of the sort in the past. So we'll have to see. Now, the Americans are talking about sanctions and are imposing sanctions. The Europeans are talking about it, haven't done so yet. I think whatever the sanctions will be and the impact of them, the more important thing is the political message, which is that the relationship between Turkey, a longtime Western partner in the Western alliance, has started to fray to the point of snapping. And that has consequences, of course, because what will Turkey do? And we may well see Turkey turning towards the other camp, the Russian-led camp. And that will have, again, all kinds of consequences for the stability in the region. So I would urge all sides to reconsider taking that approach and to find a way to manage the situation. Turkey is facing a military challenge from the PKK. There's no question about that. The question is, how do you resolve that? And the answer is not by military means. There has to be, again, a return to diplomatic talks, as we had in the past, between the two sides. The United States can help broker these. And in Syria, we have to see the same thing. And I think whenever you talk about a troop withdrawal, it should not be precipitous. It should be an organized one where you don't leave chaos in your wake.
Wise counsel from Joost Hilteman, Eustace Program Director, Middle East and North Africa, for the International Crisis Group.